What's up? Welcome to the live deep dive. I'm Paul. That guy's Ian. Let's talk Texas sports. But first, let's talk about this here channel. And let's talk about Inside Texas. Join Inside Texas today. $1 gets you 4 months. That's unbelievable. That'll almost get you into the fall season, folks. You got to do this. It's for new members only. Best talk and best conversation about Texas and college sports that you'll find. And then we want to thank our great sponsor, the Inside Texas Tailgate Giveaway, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors. You can win a Blackstone 28-inch XL Omnivore Griddle, Yeti Rode 32-inch hard cooler or 32-ounce hard cooler, 18-by-10-foot Texas flag canopy, University of Texas folding chairs, parentheses, two, Yeti Rambler 20-ounce tumblers, two. This is awesome. What an amazing giveaway. No purchase needed to enter or win. One entry per person, must be in person to win. That is a haul, ladies and gentlemen. Go ahead to Academy and take advantage of this. But right now, you're with us, and you're going to take advantage of our wisdom, as limited as it may be, about college football and the world in general. We asked on Inside Texas for people to submit questions for us to address live. Ian, you ready to tackle some questions, buddy?
Yeah, I do have, my wife is trying to text me. I told her, hey, I emptied the litter box, like you said, and I know your parents are coming, but the trash can isn't full, so now it's full. It has a lot of litter in it, but it's not full. She said, can you take it out anyway? And I was like, I don't make the rules. The trash can is not full. We'll just have to have cat turds in there.
She still wants you to take it out. Her parents are coming, man. She wants to call us home. Just do it.
I don't make the rules, Paul.
The trash can makes the rules. The point is, she makes the rules when her parents are coming. You got to respect her authority in this matter.
All right.
We're going to respect some authority with regards to the SEC contenders this year. Ian, read us the question. Give us your initial answer.
Question is, who are the legit SEC contenders this year? With so many teams rebuilding, could it be chaos?
Ooh.
And does improved quarterback play, making some dangerous assumptions there, put the SEC back on top nationally? And I think the legit SEC contenders are Texas, pending further portal additions that we expect, Georgia, they're not done yet, Alabama, that is...
Give me a dark horse.
A dark horse. Oh, Florida. But their schedule is...
The caveat is a healthy Lagway.
Oh, yeah, that too. Although that dude, do you remember he tore like his hamstring? And then there's all this like, oh, he might play against Texas. We were just laughing all week. And then only 1 week later, he came in and looked like a monster.
Yep. Yeah, they didn't want to sacrifice him against Texas. They took the blowout and planned for the rest of the year, which was probably smart in the big picture.
We barely dodged a bullet there.
Like. The second part of that question was, does improved quarterback play put the SEC back on top nationally? I don't think that's an assumption. I think SEC quarterback play can't get worse. We thought it was going to be good last year, but several guys didn't perform, whether due to injury or hitting slumps. I think we're going to see better overall quarterback play in the conference, headlined by Arch Manning, Garrett Nussmeier at LSU, and I think probably DJ Lagway if he's healthy.
You know, LSU actually is another – I need to get a better look at their roster.
They need to play a little better defense for me to consider them a real contender.
Did you notice Missouri, I kind of – that's a really dark horse, but – they did not miss. They lost like five guys in the NFL draft off their defense, and LSU poached their defensive coordinator, and they didn't miss a beat.
Yeah, that's very interesting. But I still think they were at a high watermark last year, and they had a very favorable schedule. I think they're going to come back down to earth a little bit. All right, let's go to the next question, Ian. We got a bunch of them, so we can't fritter around wasting time. What skills/abilities does Emmett Mosley have that aren't currently present on the roster? Emmett has two T's, by the way.
Ability to win contested catches. I think that's the main one. He's pretty physical. There's like a clip going around the Longhorn interwebs right now of him taking like a Notre Dame defender and just like blocking them blindside style off the field. He's a pretty physical player in general, but I have heard that the staff actually thinks they have more of that now than they did before. Like DeAndre Moore is game for that kind of physicality in the blocking, and Wingo is. What do you got?
I agree. One thing I noticed about his film for a true freshman, pretty good at settling into spots, finding space, not overrunning his zone, right? Like the rule of it is, like Jordan Whittington was very good at this. If you find yourself in space, turn around. Like, why are you running towards a defender? So I think Mosley did a good job there for a freshman. Also, I would offer Ashton Daniels, not a real good quarterback for old Stanford. And I think that limited some of that receiving core, Mosley included. So I think he's going to bring a nice addition to this receiver room. I think he's going to do some dirty work for us. And I think he's a guy, you know, you and I were kind of going back and forth of like, who's our guy for 3rd and 7? I wonder if Mosley might be that guy. Just kind of winning with an understanding of the coverage and how to position his body in space. We shall see.
My only caveat there, can he do it outside or does he need to be in the slot?
I don't think he's a pure outside receiver because I don't think he's very threatening physically yet, but he might have been constrained by his quarterback play.
Yeah. So is DeAndre Moore, can he play outside?
Yeah, he could play outside a little bit.
We may have to do that, at least on 3rd down.
Yeah. All right, next question.
I'll do this one. How many wins next season hinge on who Texas lands in the portal at key positions? I'll tell you one win that absolutely hinges on that. Oh, two. I'll give you two. The SEC championship game and the national championship game.
Okay. Any other regular season games where you think the portal will play a vital role?
I mean, potentially any of them. I think we both agree that this team needs more weapons to guys that can be go-to bucket getters, you know?
Yeah.
Against the top teams. I don't know if they have any sure thing guys that can do that. Like Mosley, maybe.
I think this team, probably the fat part of the bell curve, if we did not add a single person in the portal, to include the kicker from Texas State we just got, we didn't add anybody.
Is that official?
I don't know. Okay. We'll see. Whatever. We'll edit this in post. Oh, it's live. Too bad. Basically, I think we're a 9-3 team if we added no one. If we add some basic portal additions, some basic need filling, I think that raises our ceiling or raises our floor up a win and a half, if you want to be all precise about it. So that's how I feel. And I think we will land some good guys. It's just a question of the upside. And I think a lot of that's determinant on defensive tackle, tight end, wide receiver. You guys know the drill. Maybe an additional offensive lineman. And then there's always the best available, right? I mean, if just a great athlete enters, even in a position of strength, go take him. Who cares? I want to talk to you about being in a position of strength when you're buying a house. You need an elite mortgage guy. You need Gabe Winslow. Go to mortgagesbygabe.com or call 832-557-1095. Why should you go to mortgagesbygabe.com? Well, I don't know if you know this, Ian, but if you go to mortgagesbygabe.com, it has a feed of the deep dive of my podcast, Everyone Gets a Trophy. It has a feed of his Astros podcast, and it has a feed of our Inside Texas channel. So if you want a central place to stay on top of all your Longhorn sports in one central feed, go to mortgagesbygabe.com. He's also going to be writing some essays and some really informative stuff about the mortgage market, how that process works. Really, really sharp guy, former National Merit Scholar, 20 years in the industry, and of course, a proud UT grad. Give him a call, 832-557-1095, and go check out mortgagesbygabe.com. All right, next question. This is a very good question from our friend on Inside Texas, the elusive shadow. Is the Nico situation a watershed moment for college football or just a case of one guy overplaying his hand? What do you reckon, Ian?
More the latter. I also have another take on this that I feel like has been strangely absent in media. I think Tennessee was delighted to get off this contract. He was already, he already had a very big NIL deal that he was not living up to at all. If you watched him last year, the reason they went to the playoffs were defensive line, Jamaat McCoy, Dylan Sampson, in some order. Maybe that one.
Dylan Sampson.
What'd I say?
Simpson.
Oh, yeah. Dylan Sampson. I think him trying to bargain for more, if I'm Tennessee, I'm like, this offense is so easy and you can't even do it, and we're already paying you way too much. We turned Hendon Hooker into a NFL draft guru favorite on Twitter. We can get by without you. So that I have, that's my suspicion, which is that Tennessee saw an opportunity to get some positive PR and get off a bad contract.
Yeah, I think they would have played their hand that they were dealt had he just stayed stagnant. But I think when the rumors of his attempt to hold out before the playoff, I think things soured well before this last incident, right? And I think, as you said, he had a poor uptake of the basic offense if you watched Tennessee play. Is it a watershed moment? I think there's some value in it, and it is a little bit of a cautionary tale for other people. Unfortunately, he doesn't have professional management, and that's going to continue. You're going to continue to have parents and sort of informal or street agents, for lack of a better term, sort of trying to run this stuff, and they don't really know what they're doing, or they view the young man as basically a conduit to their own pockets. And that's something that we're not going to be able to get out of college football. But if someone's sort of on the fence on this, I think this is an opportunity to realize you need professional representation. And if you're 20 years old, you're now a young man. You're not a boy. You're not a kid. You're a young man, and you need to probably create some boundaries in your life, even if they're difficult.
I think a lot of agents made money out of this. This is a watershed moment for college football agents.
Yeah. I would say, I think you guys would be surprised how many really dumb people are in these guys' ears. And not just family, but people that take an interest in them. And it's hard for the athletes to exercise discernment. So it's hard. All right. What is the role of college football game day in manufacturing consent? Wow, a little Noam Chomsky entering our deep dive amongst college football fans and developing the greater college football media zeitgeist. Look at that. All right. Great question. Ian, I'll pitch it to you.
I feel like this question is right up my alley, except for the part where I almost never watch college game day.
Ditto.
Partly because it's just never something I've totally got into, and partly because, probably the same reason as you, I have a kid, I have multiple kids that will play sports on Saturday mornings.
Yep.
Saturdays are almost like a work day for me. They are a work day for me in the regular season.
They're a work day for both of us, actually.
It's a lot of work, and you're like, it's good work. I mean, you're sitting on the couch. Sorry, I gotta clock in here. Really? Are you going to write about Stanford, Notre Dame? I might.
Yeah.
But the mornings are almost all for family.
Yeah. So I'm with Ian. I Saturday's a work day for me. I'm trying to do stuff with my son and trying to do community stuff. And I want to watch the games. And I honestly, even if I have the opportunity to watch it, I put it on mute or I skip it and I do something else, or I go do pushups or something. I just can't bear like the typical panel type show. I like the signs. I like when they have Shane Gillis as a guest.
Oh yeah.
They had Timothy Chalamet, who was actually great.
Yeah.
You guys should watch the movie The King if you've never seen it. He's very good.
I need to still do that.
So I think there is an element of they create what the talking points are going to be for college football. But I'll be honest, I'm usually not on the same page as the talking points. And I usually don't have, I'm not very impressed with the national writer college football zeitgeist most of the time. So that's kind of my opinion. Ian, anything to add?
I don't think that they do. I think that they are, they don't really need to manufacture that much consent for the companies to do what they want. Maybe every once in a while. For the most part, what they prefer is just generating lowest common denominator interest and talking points and back and forth. You watch like anybody, like I saw Dan Orlovsky the other day chime in on the Nico Yamalayava situation. And he's like obviously a very bright and thoughtful person. And he had just the dumbest take, just the dumbest take. And it was a very obvious, like right before the segment, they're like, okay, who takes this side and who takes this side? And
yeah. Then
so much of these shows work that way. And it's all WWE. It's not manufactured. It's not as sinister as manufacturing consent. It's all kayfabe.
There's an element of contrivance, but that's the point of the manufacturing part of the consent, right? That's why you prefaced that. It's manufactured. That's the point.
Yeah, but the point is not to get consent amongst college football fans so much as just give you something to yell about.
Well, I don't think it's Shannon Sharp, Skip Bayless. I think the idea is we're trying to tell you what's quote unquote capital I important, right? I'm not talking about stupid stuff like Desmond Howard saying Ohio State's going to go 5-7 after they have all these guys go to the NFL, right? I mean, I'm talking about more like who should be in the playoff, NIL, like all that stuff. They try to sort of set the agenda of talking points. It's kind of up to you whether or not you follow. I don't. So I guess Desmond, that's the point.
Desmond needs to come to the Ian Boyd School for opposing fan base trolling.
You're pretty good at it.
He learned how to couch these troll takes a little bit better.
All right. This is a great question, a very interesting one. Ian, read it for us and let's talk about it.
If you had to, this is a great one. If you had to rank all FBS programs in the state of Texas from us, meaning University of Texas, all the way down to Sam Houston State, making an assumption there, what does that look like?
Ooh, so I can promise you Sam Houston State's not the worst.
No way.
And are we on the top? Are we number one, Ian?
Yeah.
Yeah, we are. Sorry, A&M. A&M is number two. To me, it's Texas A&M. And then I think there's a pretty wide gap when you get to some of the Big 12 and ACC schools. How would you rank that tranche? Yeah, I'll throw out five schools that I think sit in that tranche.
Yeah.
We're manufacturing consent here now, Ian. Texas Tech, SMU, Baylor, TCU, Houston. How would you rank those five jobs?
I might go SMU third.
Yeah, I'm tempted to do that as well.
Okay. Now that they are back in the Pony Express business, Texas Tech has money. But it's, I don't know, they're just never quite as sharp and they're remote. SMU is like, I know everyone will tell you, they have no actual cachet in Dallas.
Yeah.
They don't have like a fan base.
Nope.
Their donors are all like Highland Park. And that's, you know, it's like, it's an old money school. And they used to have, during their death penalty period where they just stopped trying for like two decades, they actually had trouble when they did want to be good at athletics because they'd gotten to a point where they didn't have like easy A majors at the school anymore. Not like SMU is like some prestigious academic place, but they didn't have like places to hide athletes that weren't actual real students. I don't know how they got past that. Maybe they just cheat. I don't know.
I think they addressed that and just they're playing the game now. But I think SMU is a pretty good school. So I think Texas Tech would be a competitor there, clearly. Yeah. How do you How do you sort of segment Baylor, TCU, Houston? We've seen Baylor have tremendous success under Briles. I mean, in fact, there's no program, as I've documented, with more beta, with more deviation year to year than the Baylor Bears, right? TCU played for a national title, for God's sake. And Houston, we know, has been a coach-building program, you know, almost by osmosis, just being located in Houston. Some athletes are going to fall to you. So how do you make sense of those programs?
Here's my differentiator, which is that TCU, Baylor, and Houston, at any given point in time, can have a involved, wealthy donor that helps them elevate to a higher level, and they can also not. Whereas I think SMU's the investment and the want to amongst their donor class is a little more consistent.
Yeah.
Which I know sounds ridiculous because they didn't even do anything for 30 years or whatever. But I think it's a little more consistent. Whereas Texas Tech, I mean, right now, Texas Tech has like almost Oregon money, it seems like, because those oil bros. And TCU has guys like that from time to time. And Houston's had Tillman Fertitta. Baylor had McLean. But I just don't know if that's – I just don't think that's as consistent at those places. And yeah. Other than Houston, the other ones are not right in the middle of one of the two big talent beds.
Probably not coincidence that these segmentations are also by conference, right? The two SEC schools at the top, pretty big gap, Big 12 ACC. And I don't think there's a lot of room – between the Big 12 and ACC. I think it's going to vary year to year. ACC has a couple of elite programs in it, and SMU is trying to be one of them. They're effectively just trying to buy their way into it, and it's been working. All right, let's go to the next tranche, because I think this is interesting, Ian. Because yeah. We're trying to just project the future, not what they once were. Sam Houston, not at the bottom. I would say the bottom is UTEP. I would say that's the most challenging FBS job in Texas.
I think UTEP is the worst FBS job, period.
Interesting. I'd have to think about it.
It's the same reason that you mentioned that it is closer to LA than it is to, what, Houston?
Yeah.
It's so far out there. And then it's not like – so it's like it's a Texas school, but it's way out there. And then it's – it's the other side is not like Phoenix or LA. Those are still another trek across the desert to get to those places as well. So you're way out there. It's not like a prestigious school, doesn't have some famous alumni, doesn't have like a big donor base. It's just like a satellite school for Texas kids that want to get a degree and, you know, are not going to get into these other schools on the list.
Cool stadium setting. I'll give them that.
It is nice.
Here's the potential risers, and this is what's interesting. Not long ago, we would have had Rice probably at the top of these other schools, right? I don't think that's the case anymore. I think UNT, Texas State, Sam Houston, UTSA – they've decided to invest in athletics as part of the value proposition of acquiring students. And like, we're going to be good at something. We're going to be good at football. We're going to be good at basketball. We're going to have some identity. And I think that has really created some interest and an upsurge. So UTSA, I think, has been hugely elevated by Jeff Traylor. I don't know if that would continue post-Traylor, although they seem to have made some investment there. I think the intriguing one to me is Texas State. Great location, fun school. And I wonder if they can get some donors and some facility upgrades that will make them more interesting. And I think there's some viability of just capturing University of Texas, Baylor, SMU transfers, right? As well as, you know, native recruiting. What do you think? How would you sort of look at these schools down at the bottom, the six?
I see it the same. I actually spent a year at UTSA in 2004, 2005. It was my freshman year. And the school is absolutely loaded with like kids that grew up Texas fans.
Yeah.
And didn't get into Texas. and sometimes we'll drive up anyway and go to 10 games. And basically like tons and tons of like very, your typical average student that like loves sports, wants to have a good time while they're in college, before they settle down in their career world life. And I went to like some basketball games that year. The year after they had the guy that was drafted by the Spurs that nobody's going to remember his name. I know I don't. And their basketball games were like packed and a fun experience.
Yeah.
So also, as we've discussed, the state is getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and the UT enrollment is not growing at a commensurate rate. So the caliber of like students and people that are now being funneled to these schools is higher.
Yeah.
In terms of academics or whatever, not, you know, their moral character or anything.
The value proposition for Sam Houston, it's in Beast, Texas. And you're going to get some East Texas athletes who are the classic East Texas guys. They're a senior in high school, 6'4", 195, playing defensive end. And the guy's fast, he's athletic, he's aggressive, he's tough. And major schools are like, yeah, he's too light, whatever. We don't even look at his film. He's a two-star. A year and a half later, you feed him and make him lift weights, he's 240.
That exact person walked on to Texas State in the 2010s, went to the NFL, and is now the head coach at the new high school here. Tim Nicky is exactly what you're describing.
There you go. East Texas is littered with those guys. So simply by virtue of their location, I think Sam Houston has some relevance. And obviously they're like Texas State. They're trying to make the move up. And then finally, UNT, the location is fantastic to attract athletes. I feel like they're competing with a lot there, but there are a lot of athletes to choose from. And DFW, if you're going to put your school in any urban area, I'd take Atlanta or Dallas, right?
Yeah, they're right there.
Like, I mean, they're in Denton. Someone's going to say, like, well, actually, you guys know what I mean, DFW.
If they're – I'm not basically DFW now.
Yeah.
If their staff – the DFW has reached, like, beyond that even, right?
It's on the – it's, like, somewhere near Amarillo now, I think. DFW's gotten big.
You can't get around it when you're driving by. It's awful.
Nope.
If their staff doesn't know every – high upside three-star in the area, they just don't care. They're not trying. Yeah. So it's a, yeah, absolutely.
So I think you can win at Texas State. I think you can win at Sam Houston at UNT. UTEP is hard. UTSA is hard, maybe, if you lose Traylor and his magic touch. We'll see. And then Rice, the value proposition is an amazing education. I just think that they're getting harvested by the big boys. Whenever they do make a good find, and we'll find the starting tackle for Ohio State Buckeyes, left tackle, 6'6", 350-pound Rice guy, homegrown Houston kid who is a two-star, and he grew into his body. He got more coordinated, and they developed him at Rice. Ohio State plucked him, and he's going to be facing Colin Simmons in Columbus in about four months. So – I just think Rice is just going to be raided continuously. Still a place that if you want to offer a value proposition of life after football, that's a nice thing to hold. But if you've got aspiring NFL players, that may not be as persuasive to those kind of guys, right?
If you're familiar with the type of people who are Rice grads, often successful, not always super interested in football. My dad is a Rice grad. He does not care about football much at all, except insofar as his son has made it his career. If you're a wealthy donor in Houston and you're like, I want to spend some money and have some fun watching the local team be good and I can be like, look what I've done. Or you want like NIL, legitimate NIL, like I bet one of these athletes would be a sponsor for my business. You're going to go with Houston. Or you're going to go with A&M or Texas.
Yeah.
You're not going to go with Rice.
Yeah, there's a much broader appeal. I've often played this game with friends of, hey, if you had a bunch of free cash, go take over Sam Houston. Go there. upgrade their program by players and see if you can create relevance for a nobody, right? Can you be the next Miami Hurricanes or even a lesser version? SMU is kind of trying to do that, although they have had prior success in a different version of putting money into their program. Now it's more legit. But I've always thought that's an interesting test case. If you have sort of the natural recruiting grounds and sort of a fertile culture, it would be interesting to invest a lot of money and see just how far you could go in creating a college football team in a disciplined way and, you know, kind of running it like a pro team, which is kind of where we're headed.
Feels like Sam Houston may already have that in short order because they care about that program out there.
They do. They need a facilities build out. Like they play in, like their field is 30,000. You know, it's that kind of deal, right? So that's where like a UTEP, they have like a real stadium. You know, UTSA has a real stadium, the Alamo Dome. It needs some upgrades, but, you know, that stuff kind of matters too. But anyway, that is where we are on the major questions, but we are going to end with one question. Cheeky one. Ian?
I would, if y'all think I'm verbose now, you have no idea what I'd be capable of if this were actually the case.
What do you think? Would your compensation go up if you were paid by the word? Or are you paid by the word?
It would skyrocket because every article I wrote would become a 2,000-word treatise. No, I usually try to ideally I try to trim mine down for more efficiency of thought. You?
I had the realization long ago that about half the people don't read the article. They just comment on the headline. So that may have trimmed some of my mega articles of yore from 3,000 words to a tidy 850. Actually my contract, I get paid 10 cents per adverb. So I always try to use words like quickly, hastily, because that triggers my bonus over and over. Adjectives, I'll have like three adjectives because I get a nickel an adjective. I'll have three adjectives before a player. Quick, dexterous, nimble. I won't just say he's quick. So.
Brilliant.
Yeah. Brilliant. And Jelly from Notre Dame just entered the portal. Tennessee, ? I like it.
To me, that what's interesting there is, I guess, Lloyd Carr's kid is going to be the starter at Notre Dame.
Yeah, he's going to be the starter. Does Angeli – I know he's accurate and very veteran. Does he have a big enough arm to open up that offense?
I don't know. I mean, if you have the right timing, I don't know if it super matters. I think we got one more thing to get to in the – Oh my gosh.
The chat has voted. Only 30 votes. 53% say that you're Batman. They're doing this just to be contrarian. They're doing this just to offer a jab. The guy looks like Robin. Like, what are we doing here?
You all know the truth, though, is that long before I was a blog boy, I looked up to Paul and read his writings on Barking Carnival. And was like, this is great. This is so much better than the writing I found in other places. I want to read this all the time and I want to write things like this. I even got a rebuke early in my career that was like, don't try to be Paul Wadlington. Do your own thing a little bit, at least. So the point of that story is that Paul is Bruce Wayne, but he's the old one. It's like broken down.
Yep.
I'm the Batman beyond young Batman. So
the Batman where Christian Bale fakes his death and then Michael Caine sees him later at the French Cafe and gives him a little nod and Christian Bale's like, sup? I'm old and ruined and you're the guy that wanders into the Bat Cave and the bats explode and a new Batman has been...
Well, no, you're just trying to backdoor me into being Robin again.
No, that's not Robin. That's the new Batman. It's the successor to Batman. Alfred. Hey, you know what? Alfred is amazing. So Alfred is like Mr. Everywhere. He was in Burma hunting jewel thieves. He was obviously was like, you know, just all over. Paul is Bane. That I have an aspect of Bane to my personality as well. It's true.
Are you too old? Are you too old for the animated series to be your foundational Batman?
I've seen it with my son. It wasn't like part of me growing up watching that. No.
Like the early 90s one?
No, I mean, I didn't watch that. No. I've seen it though on reruns with my son.
It's great.
It is good. Yeah. That's more like they're stepping into the Dark Knight aspect of Batman, not the Zam Pow zingy Batman. All right, guys. All the comments in the chat are fantastic.
If you were going to call me or Paul for fisticuffs, you would definitely get Paul. Paul has done like some boxing. And have you done jiu-jitsu?
Yeah.
A little bit?
A little bit.
I am not particularly well-trained in combat, so.
He's trained in verbal combat and rhetorical sparring. Do not oppose him or you'll feel the wrath of the contrarian.
Yeah.
All right, Ian. Hey, this has been a blast. And thanks to all of you for joining us. Really appreciate the questions. We got a whole mine of gold that we can continue to refine and plumb, Ian, because we got some more questions left over that were very good. So we will address this next. Folks, thank you so much for joining us. This has been a live deep dive. We'll do it again soon. Y'all take care and hook 'em.